Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ask Catherine. This is Carolyn Betts and Catherine Austin Fitz. We have questions as of March 6th. We are recording as of March 8th for publication this Friday on March 10th. And I can't believe it, Carolyn. It's only 20 pages to the script. This is the shortest Ask Catherine I've ever seen. What happened?
Don't know. The last one was huge, so.
Yeah, it was 80 pages. Anyway, so skinny week, you're being light on Catherine and Carolyn. Let's dive in. Cash and precious metals. Catherine, in order to have a deposit in a state bank, does one need to be a resident or own property in the state? I'm in New York State and am interested in opening an account at Tennessee State Bank. So it will depend on each sovereign bank what the rules are. Essentially, a good state sovereign bank is focused on wholesale business for the banks and credit unions and savings banks in their jurisdiction. The Bank of North Dakota, which is the only one, does take retail as account, but they don't do online banking. So you essentially have to drive to the state capital to make a deposit. I believe Bank of North Dakota only takes citizen residents.
I think
that
that's
state. Yeah. I can't imagine that another sovereign bank would cross state lines. So I think it's highly unlikely. Now, the Texas Bullion Depository does take out of state accounts. So there you've got Sovereign Bullion Depository, and they are doing out of state business, but it's not a bank. So we'll see. We'll see as they pass these, as they create these different banks, what the rules will be. But I suspect you've got to be in state. Question, is the U.S. $2 bill representative silver? Once it says it's a silver note, would any of the states that are issuing their own gold-covered U.S. dollars work anywhere else in the U.S. since it's gold-covered? I do want to become more financially savvy. I need a simple way to be savvy, not just exist. I need to capitalize on the knowledge. Have not fully done so. I believe the first place to start is buying silver. It's the metal and jewelry sold as jewelry, an okay place to acquire silver. Somebody is always setting up shops somewhere to buy people's jewelry. I know from the start, they were stripping people of their last tangible assets for the craziness of fiat. Thanks for all you do. There's a wonderful thing that you have been doing. Your sphere of connectedness is very lovely to behold. May the eternal creator continue to bless and keep you. So you and I just looked this up. And the reason there's an indication if the $2 bill is a silver certificate is once upon a time, many, many years ago, it used to be a silver certificate, but it hasn't been for many years. And I put the link in the show notes to the wiki entry for silver certificate. You can read the whole history. Any comments on that?
Only that there is no simple way to become financially savvy.
Well, we'd like to think if you dive in enough to the Solari report, you can take a journey towards financial savvy without the pain.
Okay, there's no easy way. There might be a simple way, but that does not mean it's not a lot of work.
Well, but I mean, if you look at all the financial frauds you and I have lived through, right. I would love to see people be able to come financially savvy without having to be experienced, you know, being a target of financial fraud.
Well, yeah, you don't want them to have to, you want them to be able to capitalize on our experience.
Right. So they also mentioned gold covered dollars. I think you're referring to gold bucks. I'm not a fan. You know, it's not a piece of gold that you can melt down or a piece of silver and melt down, but it also is a document that can have digital technology on it. So it's kind of the worst of both worlds. Any comments?
Yeah. Anything that's not effectively a state-run depository of money that issues a certificate, which there is none as far as I know, although there may be something like that in Texas. But barring that, you always have custodial risk, and you've got complicated contracts for custodial arrangements backing anything that is a certificate that represents itself as being a right to having certain money that's certain precious metals that are on deposit.
I think they're referring to gold bucks, which have, if you look online, they have gold integrated into the paper.
Well, is it enough gold that if you melted it down, it would be enough to cover the supposed value?
As far as I know, there's no way to melt it down. It's too little and it's, you'd have to burn the certificate.
Well, so how is somebody going to know whether to accept it or not if it isn't intrinsically gold?
As I said, for me, it's the worst of both worlds. So on Financially Savvy, I think the first thing to do is just start learning.
Absolutely. I'm not
Just
saying it
start
can't be
learning.
done.
Oh, yeah. I think the journey is never over.
Right.
So you start and you take, you go where you can. We have a lot of great best of the Precious Metal Salary Report with Franklin Sanders, including a wonderful audio seminar called Investing in Coins. And I would listen to Investing in Coins. It's just a great introduction.
It's definitely worth the effort.
Right. Okay, who's stumping in South Dakota? So there was a retired WHO director, the former prime minister of Norway, and the subscriber who wrote in thought that they were talking about the current director, but they won't. It's one of the universities up there, one of the colleges, was bringing in this person who had in the 90s been the director of WHO, so a long, long time ago. But interestingly enough, if you go back and look at her record, she was prime minister or president all during the period when they brought up the sovereign wealth fund, which I think is one of the most impressive acts of governance in the world. So I, for one, would be fascinating to talk with her. Anyway, so it turned out to be something other than the current guy. Okay, now they're talking about the Belarus president meeting with Xi Jinping, and one of the European authors, journalists, said his assessment is being laid, the groundwork is being laid, and America and its Western allies are marked as unavoidable adversaries and on a collision course with China. So put another way, China is positioning itself strategically in a practical way and protecting itself from this eventuality. Alexander called it the neocon Hotel California policy, and I have no doubt that Europe will commit total economic suicide through sanctions packages on behalf of the Biden neocon regime, creating genocide in their own population, the likes never seen before. I hope this never gets past the Cold War. It feels to me Europe is ground zero for the Canary coal mine test of viability for prison Hotel California crossing every European national border, implemented by our bonkers, inept EU dictators. The neocon dream of implementing technological imperialism around the globe might be difficult today, but they certainly have not given up on this endeavor. A bright spot, Alexander casually mentions, 5G is dead in the water in Europe due to the enormous energy and consumption costs. In other words, Europe can't afford it, and that could give a dent to the technological aspects of mind manipulation control. Wow, wouldn't that be great if it's true?
Yeah.
So they think if the you-know-what hits the you-know-what, do you think the EU will levy sanctions on China like they did on Russia and commit total suicide? Huh. Lavrov, we just published a video of Lavrov explaining that the reason people vote for these things is they're threatened harm to them and their families.
You
It's
mean
really,
people in high places?
yep. So it's really a military question. Can they force the Europeans to commit suicide?
Right.
I think your guess is it's a military question. Back to invisible weaponry and who controls. Equity overview. My father and I have moved from California to Tennessee, and the question is, what are the good banks? I don't know. I've used several banks or I've used one bank in my local area in Tennessee, but what I would do is I would go to Weiss or one of the other bank rating services and look up the A-rated banks. I'd also check out the B rated, but I would go just do a search for the ones in your area and then go visit them. If you look at our article, How to Find a Good Local Bank, I would just go through that process after I found the A and B rated banks in my area. Any thoughts, Carolyn?
As I always point out when talking about banks, this includes savings and loans, savings banks, and credit unions.
Right.
Don't forget.
I think they're all, I don't know, in Weiss and some of the bank rating services, it may only just be the bank. So I do think it's important to go to the local chamber and get a list of all the local banks and credit unions and saving banks in your area. That's what I would do.
Right.
And that's in the How to Find a Good Local Bank article. Hi, Catherine. Not exactly a question. Don't need an answer. So this is an article on the rise of Germany during the Nazi period and the involvement of Dylan Reed. It's funny, I think we touched on this last week, but I forgot to remind you of the story when I published Narco Dollars for Beginners. Do you remember that?
Yep.
And it just went virally everywhere. And about a month later, so I started to engage with the people who were anti-war on drugs. And it had been published by Narco News, and Al Giordano, who was the publisher, had talked me into writing it. I hadn't wanted to, but he had talked me into it, so I wrote it. And it turned out that all of the anti-war on drugs group had come together to try and stop me. And they were having a meeting with, I don't know, 20 or 30 people. It was big. It was a big meeting. And Al sent me the email and he said, "Full disclosure, you need to see this." And it turned out all of them, with rare exception, were financed by Soros. And their number one concern was that I would take away their funding. And he sent it to me and I wrote back and I said, "I assure you, I would never take a dime of Soros funding. It would totally compromise everything I'm trying to do. So you've no concern, nothing to worry about." But what I discovered is all of them were financed almost to a person by Soros. It was incredible. And then the other thing is they called me a Nazi because I worked at Dylan Reed, and Dylan Reed had financed the rise of Hitler. And that made me a
It happened
Nazi.
before you were born.
Yep. It was pretty funny. Anyway, I was shocked. I was shocked that they would take the position that I was a Nazi because I'd worked at Dylan Reed, but that they were afraid I'd take their Soros funding away from them. It was just, am I in kindergarten or what here? I couldn't believe it. It was shocking. Dear Catherine, love your work. I'm in awe of the wonderful people in your conspiracy. Your conversation with John T. and Carolyn Betts are eagerly awaited. Okay. So you mentioned a couple of things on your March 2nd Ask Catherine. First, the property insurance rates going up. If you're looking for property, you might have noticed notices of flooding and fire risk going up. Of course, this is speculation on my part, but I believe this is all part of the Great Reset global warming narrative. Really? Do you think? Yeah, we agree. In the coming years, I expect to see both insurance and tax rates going up. Little by little, they want to make it unaffordable to live outside of the designated zones, 15-minute cities. So then you asked a question about Google Chrome and why we don't recommend Brave. And I was trying to tell this to Titus the other day. He uses Brave. I don't think he was listening to me. Here's what one of our team members prepared for me. Google makes their browser and engine available for free to anyone who wants to use it at the core of the proprietary browser. It's called Chromium. And under the hood of most all browsers, including Chrome, Chromium updates still come from Google. So whenever you update your Chromium-based browser, Google collects data about you. As for Brave, they need to make money somehow to exist. The same is true for all Chromium-based browsers. Brave removes data collection advertisements from the sites you visit, but replaces them with their own. That's how they make money. I also take exception to their free and open source claims. Their core, Chromium, is free, but it's not theirs. The extra software they add on top is most certainly not open source. Their business model tells the whole story. They only give away the integrated parts to make money, which is not in the spirit of open source. Okay, so that's our teammate's comment on Brave. Anything on Brave, Carolyn?
Just that I heard it was supposed to be great, so I downloaded it. And when I told that particular person that I had done that, he said, "Oh, no, get rid of it." And so I did. And I have Quant. That's apparently the current, you can kind of trust them place to go. And I found that downloading, you can either download the whole thing Or you can make it an extension on something like Firefox. So on one of my computers, it's an extension on Firefox because that's a Linux system and maybe they don't have a download for Linux. And then on my Mac, I have the full download. But you have to keep checking because, you know, one company that has a great search engine can change their policies or get acquired by another one and quietly walk toward the abyss. So you have to stay up to date on all this.
My comment is, if securities laws still applied and they applied to tech companies, almost all of them would be in prison. I mean, it's unbelievable, the deceptive marketing and disclosure. Okay, so in Pennsylvania, Judith Schwank is trying to introduce a bill that would require parents who decline some or all vaccines for religious reasons to submit to an educational session. You can't make this up. There's a lot of information here, but it's Jacinda Ardern lives.
I would love to see what one of these sessions would look like, where they explain all the safe and effective narrative.
Well, if you come properly prepared, you're going to blow them out of the water because they've got no science on their side.
Right.
Yeah. So if you want to talk science, okay, let's go. can you imagine going to one of those and bringing Palmer along to, you know, to explain for you? That would be fun. Okay. Health and food. So someone emailed Thousand Hills and Sweetgrass Co-op about their beef and whether or not they're vaccinated. And it turns out they can be vaccinated, but they do not allow mRNA and COVID vaccinations. That's the report from Thousand Hills. That's very interesting. I just want to thank you for sending that. That's very good information.
Yeah, it's up to the farmer as to the ones that are permitted. So
right.
A given farmer might not vaccinate at all.
Right. Okay, so now we're turning this over to Carolyn for recommended links. Lead us through.
Okay, the first link is to a documentary which has been out for 2 or 3 months, and I believe it's the one that's been attacked by people on the other side of the issue, the vaccine issue, who say, how do we know those people are telling the truth? But a lot of it's narrated by Jennifer Sharp, but a lot of it is interviews with people who've had adverse events as a result of the vaccine injuries is what we call that. And they describe what happened to them.
Now, so, it's not a documentary, it's an interview. Does she also have a documentary?
Well, what I looked at had clips of people.
Yeah, she has plenty of clips during the interview, but I didn't know if they were excerpts from a documentary.
Well, the Anecdotals is a documentary, I think. I've heard of it as such.
Ah, okay. This may be an interview of the person who made it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there definitely are clips of real people talking about vaccine injuries that sound familiar. The second one is just a link to the Amazon site that indicates that they are running a pharmacy and all the benefits. You know, it's a little scary thinking about disclosing.
All integrated into DOD and CIA and the 17 intelligence agencies. How convenient.
It makes it easier for them to aggregate the information to use against you.
Well, instead of bringing in drugs covertly, they can just ship them out on Amazon.
Right.
Right.
The third one is Dr. Vernon Coleman, who is what we would call a GP, was in Scotland. And he is turned in his license after some back and forth with the authorities over some of the things he did. For example, he was fined for refusing to write diagnoses on sick notes. Because he said it was a breach of patient doctor confidentiality. So he sounds like a really good guy, But anyway, he is talking about a new ban in Scotland, which I looked up and verified. There is such a ban of an anesthetic called desflurane. I probably mispronounced that, which is commonly used in operations, medical operations. And this is his rant about, well, what do you want to do? Not put people under anesthesia for climate change damage by the gases we use? But that's the alleged reason for banning this anesthetic is that it contributes to climate change.
It's so, I don't
know. Dystopian.
Right. It's dystopian. It's dystopian.
The next one is I would call it a documentary, but it's a video on Rumble of a woman named Liz Gunn, who is a fairly well-known journalist in the New Zealand. And it is her letter to Jacinda Ardern, who was the Prime Minister of New Zealand, who was rather autocratic, particularly on the COVID vaccine front, locking down the country, preventing people, from coming into the country, all sorts of things. And she resigned a couple of months ago, I want to say, much to the delight of many people in New Zealand. And this is Liz Gunn's list of reasons that Jacinda Ardern should have resigned and how awful she was, infringing on the rights, human rights of the New Zealand people.
So I would say she's arguably one of the most hideous leaders that the Anglo-American Alliance has ever produced.
Yeah.
I, for one, would vote for an ankle bracelet and have her right. work as a janitorial staff for the rest of her life with 90% of her earnings going to reimburse the people she destroyed.
Yes, I have a family member who lives in New Zealand with his family, and am pretty familiar with how awful things were in New Zealand. The next one is part two of the interview between the dark journalist and Dr. Joseph Farrell about continuity of government, UFO, and Great Pyramid mysteries, which we talked about last week, and this is a continuation. He describes again his new book that's coming out, which is kind of like the fourth in his Giza Death Star series, which maybe two-thirds of it summarizes what he did in his other books and then provides some new information. But they have an interesting discussions about what do you think the Russians think about Biden, which Joseph says, they can tell he's not in control. Joseph's theory is that in the war in the Ukraine, that it's really an artillery war, which I have not heard anyone else in particular say, but he says on an artillery basis, the Russians are much better able to produce munitions than Ukrainians and whoever supports the Ukrainians, I guess, including the United States. So that's an interesting perspective. It's an interesting, Joseph also talks about a little bit more about his theories about this pyramid in Giza pyramid in Egypt, and says he agrees with a guy named Chris Dunn, who thinks that the chambers in the pyramid were used to feed hydrogen gas, and that there is an evidence of an explosion in the King's Chamber, what they call the King's Chamber, which may have been that a spark ignited the hydrogen gas, if that theory holds. So there have been legacy news coverage of new chambers that have been discovered in that same pyramid. So it's sort of a timely discussion.
Yeah. We have one colleague who follows the pyramids very closely and says this is quite a big, big discovery, pretty exciting for many of the people more familiar.
Yes, I guess they're able to use something along the lines of the way X-rays work to be able to discover what's inside the pyramid without actually being inside. So I guess there's more recent technology that's allowed them to see more than they had been able to see before.
Okay, one more question. Hi, Catherine. A friend of mine just asked me to ask for your opinion. If she moves to another state before filing for the current year tax return, and she might also get the new driver's license, will her tax return be delivered to her new address? So I have no idea if it will be delivered. You know, you always want to put a forward in with the post office, but then she says she thinks she will have to file her tax return with her previous state instead of the new one. So if you were, usually if you live in a state for more than 6 months, that's where you file. So if I live in a state for, say, 7 months, and then I move to a new state, then I still have to file in that old state. It's my understanding. Now, I think you want to check with your particular jurisdictions.
But, right. It's a patchwork of laws, but that does not mean that if you receive income from a state directly, from a state source, that you wouldn't have to pay tax on it. So, you know, a lot of times it has to do with allocating. Let's say I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I have clients in another state or somehow income coming from another state. If I might have it on my Ohio tax return, but there's some rules under some circumstances would have to attribute some of it to another state. Right. And so I wouldn't attribute that income to Ohio. I'd be, you know, filing a return in another state.
Right. But I think you definitely want to make sure you confirm with a CPA or your tax preparer how it's going to work long before you get ready to file. Okay, that's it for questions. And there's one topic I wanted to discuss with you today. Sometimes we like to make a little excerpt, and this would make, I think, a useful excerpt. And it was inspired by something I was thinking about already. And then Scott Adams did a YouTube about a Rasmussen poll, and it inspired his cartoon Dilbert to be dropped in many places. And he started a sort of a new website or new subscription service. So it's a way of sort of breaking free of the legacy media is what it looks like to me. But let me tell you about the poll and let me tell you what he said. So Rasmussen apparently did a poll that said 26%. So they were surveying African Americans, and 26% of Black respondents disagreed with the statement, it's okay to be white, while another 21% of Black people surveyed said they were unsure. The remaining 53% of Black respondents agreed with the statement that it's okay to be white. So Adams announced, I don't think it makes any sense as a white citizen of America to try and help Black citizens anymore. Doesn't make sense. There's no longer a rational impulse. And Adams talked about why he moved to a neighborhood that was as much white as possible because Black neighborhoods have too much crime, et cetera. So he really talked about African Americans as though they were what I call a blob, and he should judge any Black person based on his judgment of the blob. Now, I listened to this, and I'll tell you why I really noted it. Normally, I would ignore stuff like this because it's all part of the divide and conquer stuff, and it's just a huge waste of time. But this time, I paid attention, and I paid attention because it has happened to me recently that someone will have a problem with another woman in the workplace and suddenly speak to me like, or, you know, in one instance, it was somebody had had a problem with one woman and then another woman. And then suddenly they blew up at me and referred to me as part of this blob of women in the workplace. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I was no longer me. I was just a member of a blob. And I was personally responsible for behavior of people who are totally separate to me. I don't control their behavior. They don't work for me. And suddenly I was completely at risk from, I was 100% responsible for all bad behavior of anybody who was also a woman. I was like, what? Now, this has happened several times in the last 2 years. You know, somebody's having a real problem with their wife, or they're having a real problem with their daughter. And the next thing you know, I'm in a blob and I'm being talked to like I'm a member of the blob, and I am not trustworthy because I'm one of them who is, in other words, their wife's bad behavior is my problem. Does this ever happen to you?
You women, it's the you women narrative. I've been had people take off people, men, you know, it's the other gender, because obviously women aren't going to do this for the most part. I have had people, men, say, oh, you feminists, assuming I'm what they call a feminist, and I'm not.
That is so funny to call you a feminist.
Because I'm a working woman. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, I'm not an anti-feminist, but, you know, I'm just somebody who's of a particular age, and I'm kind of typical of a woman who's relatively well educated and not married. And I'm all of a sudden a feminist. And then I get to hear all the things about feminists that are on this person's mind. And, you know, I'm sure it happens to people who are African-American. It happens to people whose native language is a different language, and therefore they have accents and live in this country, whether or not they're citizens. And there is a real problem with people lumping whole groups together and assuming that they're all the same.
So whenever this happens, because it's been happening more, the first thing I say is, do you have a Google phone? Do you have an Android phone? And oftentimes they say yes, because when this happens, what I feel like is I'm not talking to, you know, my colleague or my friend, I'm talking to their phone. I'm talking to whatever program is being run through their Google smartphone. And I mention this because once upon a time, I had a very dear colleague. We were very close. We did a lot together. He got an iPhone, and literally within 30 days, our close colleagueship was over. I stopped being able to talk to him. I was talking to his phone. It was one of the strangest professional experiences of my life, and very distressing. But I have to tell you, I think, because I think this happens to men. I think it happens, you know, you Americans, or you German, or you French, or whatever. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this, Carolyn, is if we believe in the rule of law, then each person is accountable for their conduct and their behavior. And they're not responsible for their neighbor. They're not responsible for their, in terms of, in other words, their neighbor's behavior has nothing to do with them. If you've ever been in litigation, which I know you have, you know how important it is that each person in the legal experience is held responsible for their actions, as supported by hard evidence.
Absolutely. And you know what? This even goes to the current apparent divide, or supposed divide, between Democrats and Republicans, or the labels liberal and conservative. None of those terms mean anything anymore. So, you know,
not people, that they ever did.
Those Republicans and those Democrats, the Democrats have done this, and the Democrats are responsible for that. And if you're talking about a specific number of people on Capitol Hill who have that designation, maybe they've gotten together and agreed on something. But as a general rule, I don't think you can make generalizations about any group like that anymore.
So it's really funny. I just watched the videos of Chuck Schumer and then Mitch McConnell trying to criticize the sharing of the January 6th videos through Fox News. And all I can say is they were definitely both part of the criminal blob.
Right. They have much more in common. You know, the crooks have much more in common with each other.
Right. You should have seen them trying to defend the official narrative. And it's very funny. Anyway, but I think there is a tremendous effort to promote and encourage blob thinking.
And it's divide and conquer. It's the divide and conquer strategy.
Right. So I want to say a few things about the African American community in connection with this, having listened to what Scott Adams said. The first thing I want to say is I grew up in a neighborhood that was predominantly African American. It started out maybe not majority African American and then steadily became more African American as I grew older. And I was raised by our family cook who was African American. And I remember when I had to make critical decisions during the litigation, whether I was going to sort of go with the establishment or go with the law. One of the critical impacts on me was thinking about who I loved and who I needed to have integrity with in terms of the decision. And it was the woman who raised me that was very instrumental in that decision because she had taught me so much about values. But what was very interesting is when I got into litigation with the federal government, I knew to go back to the African American churches to get the training in how to outwit what's called the beatdown. Because
Wow.
African American neighborhoods were targeted by the US intelligence agencies. They were used as distribution points. They were used in a variety of ways. So when somebody from, because I used to live where Scott Adams lives, I believe he lives in Pleasanton or nearby Pleasanton in California. You don't get beatdowns in Pleasanton, California of the kind that you get in the South Bronx.
Right.
So the notion that Black neighborhoods have more crime, I think there's a long story here. And for anybody who doesn't understand it, I would recommend they go read my online book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. I have gone back and studied the economics of racial politics in America. And one of the things I will say is if you look at the contribution of the African American community to the GDP, it is far greater in my experience for take out the beatdown. It is far greater than the rewards that came back to them. So if you look at the contribution of African American music and how much of that money went into non-African American pockets and how much joy it brought,
Absolutely.
right. So one of the things I'll say is if I meet an African American person, I would hope that I would meet them as one individual with another. But if I was going to associate them with a culture, I would associate them with a culture that, in my experience, has added a tremendous amount to America in many different ways. And I have to tell you, I thought Pleasanton was about the least pleasant place I ever lived. There was no soul in Pleasanton when I was there. It was very tidy, very tidy. But if we're going to talk about the African American community as a blob, they are a hugely value-added blob to the American experience, in my opinion. And there is a
Absolutely.
you're right, there's a tremendous effort to play divide and conquer here. And in my opinion, if we want to succeed as a society, we're not going to let that happen. Carolyn's not a member of a blob. I'm not a member of a blob. You're not a member of a blob. And don't let anybody get you into blob thinking. It's another reason to turn off your phone, leave it in a car, put it in a Faraday bag. I love Scott Adams' cartoons. I just don't always agree with him. And I certainly don't agree with him on this. I think he needs to spend a little bit more time hanging out in some great Black neighborhoods. Anyway.
Well, the best way to get out of blob thinking is to have a close relationship with somebody who's a member of what you thought was a blob. And you will find individualities probably that set that person apart from the blob.
I have to tell you, this is one of the greatest cab rides in my life. I always talk to cab drivers and I always learn so much.
Oh,
When
absolutely.
I took an Uber ride and the driver was a graduate student. He was just starting cryptography was what he was interested in. This was in San Francisco. He took me to the San Francisco airport from Palo Alto. And his family was from, I think it was from China, but he had other family from Taiwan. And he explained the differences between his grandparents, his parents, and himself. He was the younger generation. And he described how different their values were. And what I heard as I talked to him is he had the three generations in Taiwan, the three generations in China, the three generations sort of in Chinese America, but then the three generations in America, separate, you know, non-Chinese. Because I finally said to him, because he was describing three times four or 12 different cultures he had to navigate. And, you know, I think it taught him complexity and why he was clearly going to be very good at cryptography. But I said to him, when you think of yourself, what do you identify as? He said, I think I'm an American. But he said, you have to understand when I'm with all these different groups, the Chinese think I'm Chinese. The Taiwanese think I'm Taiwanese. The Chinese Americans think I'm Chinese Americans. And the Americans may think I'm American or some of these other groups. So he said, I have to be prepared to deal with 12 different points of view when I'm dealing with people because of this cross-cultural confusion.
Right.
And I said, so, you know, essentially he was a member of 12 blobs. And a lot of the people he was dealing with were seeing him as a blob, you know, a member of a blob instead of himself. And he had the most wonderful attitude. He was in a complete state of amusement about the whole thing. He didn't give it any energy. He just understood that was part of what he needed to navigate. And it was all very amusing.
Right. No judgment here.
Anyway, okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, you're unique. You're special. Our goal is you have a free and inspired life. Resign from the blobs. Any other comments, Carolyn?
Nope, it's been real.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week. And thank you so much for your recommended links. Thank you for your feedbacks. We appreciate it. And ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful weekend. Thanks, Carolyn. I really appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.